Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 506. I'm Tom Cagley, your host, and in the Spamcast 506, we will feature our interview with Mark Kilby. Mark and I explore distributed agile teams. Agile in distributed environments is doable, but it isn't easy. Mark provides guidance and advice. Mark recently co-authored From Chaos to Successful Distributed Agile Teams with Johanna Rothman. Link to the book on the show notes. It's at LeanPub. Mark Kilby has cultivated more distributed, dispersed, and virtual teams than co-located teams for more than two decades. Currently, Mark serves as an Agile coach at Sonatype, a remote-first software development company focusing on automation of software supply chains. Previously, Mark led Agile transformations from startups to Fortune 500 companies. Mark also cultivates dispersed communities such as Agile Orlando, Agile Florida, VirtualTeamTalk.com, and Agile Alliance Community Group Support Initiative. Mark's book, From Chaos to Successful Distributed Agile Teams, is co-authored with Johanna Rothman and is available now, link at the show notes to Mark's site and from LeanPub. Mark's also on Twitter and LinkedIn. Are you ready to discuss Agile in a distributed environment? It's time for the interview. Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate the invitation to speak to you today.
I am looking forward to it. This is one of the perennial topics that sets people either in interest mode or on edge, one or the other, depending on where they fall on the can a distributed team be agile continuum or not. So why don't we just dive in? How can an agile team, let's say, survive in a distributed environment?
It's a funny question because for me, since I've been working this way for several years now, I almost want to flip the question around because for me, Agile is more about inspecting and adapting on everything. I was listening to some prior podcasts to get ready for this one, and I think one of your guests recently said, Agile is about dealing with changing requirements. Well, yes, that's part of it. But as Agile has evolved, it's really about dealing with any changes that happen to the team and the project, and sometimes even the goals. That also includes the working environment. So I have had the fortune or misfortune to be in those places where I might be the scrum master of a team and the rest of my team is elsewhere. So I had to inspect and adapt. Mm-hmm. And so this has gone on now for close to 15 years, trying to make everyone co-located and trying to make the perfect Agile environment. And what I realized is perfect Agile environment is the one where the team can do their best work, understand their goals, work toward that no matter what the environment is. So as part of that, I look at Agile being a team that can focus on a common purpose. I have found, especially with where technology has come recently in the last 5 years, where Agile has come in its evolution, that there is many ways that a distributed team can be more successful with Agile. So it's not about Agile surviving on a distributed team. It's more, how can a distributed team not survive with Agile? Because Agile emphasizes heavy collaboration, lots of communication. So how do you work within your current distributed team to amplify those kind of things on an Agile team? That's what I tend to focus on.
So why do people get so excited then and say, hey, it has to be co-located or death, right? Almost.
Right. Well, yeah, that's another one I scratched my head on too, because as Agilists, well, I'll put it this way. I won't be too controversial, but as Agilists, we should be able to look at a situation and figure out what are the right feedback loops we put in place? How do we help the team focus on the goal? And how do we help them inspect and adapt? Mm-hmm. Where we tend to get hung up, and this comes from the Agile Manifesto, where when it came about in 2001, the technology was not there. but yet we love spreading teams across time zones, and we loved trying to look at, you know, things like follow the sun and how we can make those kind of things work. Yeah, and other great ideas. But that one principle out of the manifesto, the most efficient and effective method of conveying information to and within a development team is face-to-face conversations. That's taken right out of the manifesto.
Yeah, directly out, that, yeah.
That's
one of the principles.
There is no way you can make that work with a distributed team. I would agree, in 2001, that was painful. In 2018, that's achievable. That is achievable now. However, it's not the same kind of environment you're going to find with a co-located team. For instance, you're not going to walk on the moon the same way that you walk here on the Earth. You have to adjust a little bit. It's a different environment.
Right.
But a lot of what I found was looking at the manifesto and other things that we were able to achieve, we can pretty much check off most of those principles. We have product owners that work very closely with our teams. We have teams that collaborate and evolve their architectures. So we could check off all those. And as we looked at, it wasn't so much face-to-face, although we all use video. So we are face-to-face many, many days, many hours of the day. But it's more, are we connecting? Because I've been on co-located teams that don't connect well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not going to be agile or anything that doesn't help them. It might be more group therapist that helps them in that case. But,
and all kidding aside, I mean, I have been in offices where a team sat together in the same room, all in cubes, and people wouldn't get up and talk to each other. I mean, they would actually, you'd be one cube to another, and it would have to be email would be the only mechanism of conversation. So co-location didn't help them a hill of beans. So when I hear the argument, well, hey, you know, if we can't be co-located, we can't be agile, does that mean that if we can't be co-located, we're going to go and do classic waterfall or classic ad hoc, one or the other? And the answer is, oh, no, that's not exactly what I meant. But is there no boundaries in terms of distribution? So can a team that actually connects be in every time zone on every continent all at once?
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. So there's a few things that we've discovered, and I think you've already talked to Johanna Rothman, and we've collaborated a bit on this. There are certain boundaries, principles, if you will, that we think help define the space where distributed agile can work. Spreading teams across 12 time zones is outside those bounds. There's just no way that's going to work. But we think it's not so much the time zones. We think the focus on time zones is the wrong way to think about that particular boundary. It's more hours of overlap. So can you get 4 to 5 hours of overlap within your team? And we say that because you do need some focus time. So if you're not doing pair programming, if you're not doing mob programming, and we can come back to that, but if you're not doing those, your team members might need some deep focus time. But they also need the collaboration time. So not just the traditional kind of ceremonies around planning and stand-ups that you find in all the Agile books, but maybe you want an ad hoc design review. You want to bounce an idea off a colleague. Does the team have 4 to 5 core working hours that they all overlap? And they could be spread out 6, 7, 8 time zones. But what we've discovered is, you might have some in Eastern Europe that tend to be night owls, and they actually enjoy working late at night, and they're comfortable collaborating with colleagues on the U.S. East Coast. Or you have team members in India that can collaborate with those Eastern Europeans. So they can still get some of those 4 to 5 hours of overlap, but it's their choice to work that way. It's not forcing them into that. So choice is another big defining factor for us. Does the team have choice on how they work, how they set their core hours, and how they establish some of their working environment as a distributed team?
Well, say a little bit more about choice. Is that so? If a team decides not to have any core hours and not to overlap, is that a choice that a a team can make, or is it just the choice of which ones?
So that's a choice where you probably want to have a heart-to-heart conversation with them about how well is this going to work.
Yeah.
So there's things, and I've seen some teams where that's exactly how they operate, but I've also seen some teams where there may be some overlap, but if you have some non-native English speakers involved, they might be more comfortable communicating in chat, like a text tool, versus an audio channel of any sort. They can process what's being said better. They can also communicate better that way. Not optimal, but it's possible. But we find if the team has a choice of getting a certain amount of overlap, so you still need to set some boundaries around this, a certain amount of overlap, do they have a choice of some of the tools that they can use to communicate? Do they have access to those tools? So for instance, you know, we're on a Zoom call right now. Can anybody on the team, if the team has a Zoom instance, can anybody on the team fire it up, or does it require a particular person?
Oh yeah, it should only be the Scrum Master right to have the account.
please.
Because somebody might abuse it.
So there's a whole separate part of trusting the team to do this. What we found is you give the team choices on how they operate. I have met many teams that they want to do not only a good job, they want to do a better job. And so if you give them the support to do that, if you give them the choice of, hey, we're not going to let the organization set your core hours. You guys should set your working hours, figure out when's the best time for you to coordinate. Here's the product owner that's representing the users and the business side that will work closely with you, be there with you on a daily or maybe almost daily basis. So you can get your questions answered on what is the state of the requirements or user stories or whatever format the team is using. And you guys determine what's going to be the best environment. Is it Scrum? Is it Kanban? Is it Scrumban? So where I'm at right now at Sonatype, we give our teams those choices. And we are a rapidly growing company that is, if you read the Forrester and Mark Gardner reports, they say we're doing okay.
So. Okay. Well, super. What would happen though if the team would choose something that was less than optimal? Like, let's go back to the early or late 1950s and just wing it.
Yeah. So just wing it is usually never a great.
Oh, no, it never is. Yeah. Didn't work then. At least that's what I'm told.
Yeah. So as part of that, do you have somebody that can help guide you along the way? So for most of the successful teams that I've seen that are distributed, they have a Scrum Master, an Agile manager, a coach, whatever role you want to call it, that understands the business needs, understands the process, and also understands what the team needs as far as an environment, and willing to help balance those. So if the team is looking at making some choices, it might be that coach is saying, well, here's the boundaries I'm hearing from the business. Is that really within the boundaries? Is that going to work for the business and for you? So for instance, we're going to get rid of story points because we don't like them. Okay, well, great. So how are you going to measure whether you're delivering value? Maybe you'll come up with something innovative, but at the same time, here's some different approaches that we found that works across the organization. Do one of these other approaches work? So having that guide there that can help them with some of the choices can help with that.
How do you really, I mean, is there a mechanism or an approach that you have found most valuable to help unlocking a team's creativity?
So there's actually a few. So sometimes by giving the team choice and just letting them wrestle with it, because sometimes people are not familiar with having a choice of tools, having a choice of setting their work times, having a choice of who they work with. That can be a little overwhelming if you've never had that capability. So letting them sit and wrestle with that for a little bit, again, with that coach or agile leader to kind of help guide them on that, is one thing. Well-run retrospectives is another area. And this is not just your standard, you know, what worked well, what didn't work well, that kind of thing.
Right.
That's a good starter place for a team. But as a team matures, you want to dive a little deeper into problems and have an experienced facilitator in the organization that can help set up a unique kind of retrospective that helps them do a deep dive and come up with some unique solutions to the problems that they might be wrestling with. So maybe it's around, we can't set up automated builds in our current environment. How do we do that?
Right.
How can the team start to make some early steps toward that? And that facilitator or guide might say, you know, there might be some simple experiments. So just coaching them on how to set up an experiment within the bounds of what they can do now. And at the same time, as the team is setting those experiments, that coach, leader, whatever you want to call it, is also working with the organization to say, you know, this team is making some interesting moves. I think if we provide them with certain resources or maybe kind of ease up on some of the constraints right now, we might see something innovative.
I have occasionally, and I want to pick your brain on this one, I have occasionally run into teams that will be faced with a problem like, hey, we can't do automated testing. We're just not there yet. Or we can't do continuous builds. And unless they can hit the home run and do the whole thing, they won't take just an initial step. And obviously, we all know that if you can take that initial step, you break the inertia. How would you coach someone to actually take the first step, even though you're not going to make it all the way to home plate since it's baseball season? The first time you swing the bat.
So sometimes it's giving them some suggestions on what some possible experiments are. Johanna actually has a blog post. I'm not sure if she got it from somewhere else, but she talks about the rule of three in this one blog post, where you always give three options. Mm-hmm. Because if you give one option, it's definitely your fault. Two options, they still are going to blame you. Three, it's like, all right, they had several choices to think about. So basically,
absolutely,
how it goes.
Yeah.
Sometimes that works. Sometimes that doesn't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you need to bring somebody else into the team. It might be somebody else from the organization that they know has been successful. And so that brings a little bit of, oh, so the organization cared enough about us that they're going to loan us this person for a while to see what we can do. Or it might be a consultant. I kind of prefer having the internal person Sure. transfer in for a while, mm-hmm. because that gives a little more credibility to, hey, we think this is important. We think it's important for your team to have an investment for a while where we loan this person out to you and they help you get started. You may not hit the home run, but you're going to start figuring out how to do base hit.
So you've changed boundary or changed the energy of the team so that it really sort of forces them, force is probably the wrong word, allows them to take the first step. If you were going to give a few tips to making a distributed team highly functional, what would the sort of the top two be?
So usually the first challenge is around those hours of overlap.
Mm.
So based on where your team members are now and their work habits and how many you have on the team, that's another thing, is can you allow the team to shift hours so that they can get that 4 to 5 hours of overlap? So they can do their focus work, but they can collaborate when everyone can be online, or at least most of the team. Sometimes that's hard for the larger teams, but if you have a larger team, why not try to split that up into some smaller teams where they can get those hours of overlap? So that's usually one of the first things that I focus on.
I was going to say, you know, when you break that 50-person team down into, you know, two 25-person, I'm kidding, And unfortunately, I ran into that one the other day. It's like, okay, well, yeah, we'll make them smaller, but it's like, ooh, dudes, you know, you're still way too big. Okay, so I could see just from the point of view of scheduling, a smaller team would be better. We all know that, you know, the idea of smaller teams in Agile. What would second be?
So the number two one would be, it would be based on what is the team's comfort level with Agile. Are they inexperienced? Then I would probably start them off with something like Scrum, which has a rhythm to it. So it's getting in that rhythm of when do we plan? When do we check in on our progress? When do we think about the process and the retrospective? And just getting in those habits. But after they've done that for a while, then start to see where are they wrestling with the process. I think I recently heard you read one of your blog posts about Shuhari, one of my favorite topics.
I'll be
careful because I'll go completely off on a tangent on that one. So, but it's getting them into that shoe level, just getting in the steps and getting the muscle memory of, oh, we've got a plan, we've got to work together daily, check in, and then see where we're at. How are we doing? Are we on track or not? Do we need to adjust? Once they've done that, look at where are they struggling? Are they struggling to get everything done at the end of the sprint? Are they struggling with retrospectives? So what are they struggling with? And is it some small changes? Or is it maybe they got to get quite a bit of interrupt-driven work? So if that's the case, like maybe Scrum's not a great fit for them. Maybe it's time to look at some other processes. So Scrum is not the only, you know, tool Absolutely. In your bag, your Agile bag there. So as a coach, you should be familiar with a few different processes and what you can bring in to help the team. Mm-hmm. So at Sonatype, where I'm at now, a lot of our team started with Scrum, but they ran into some of those kind of problems. And they said, Scrum just doesn't feel right anymore. I gotta try something else on. And one of those teams shifted over to Kanban about 2 months ago, and it was amazing the change in the attitude in the team. They say it's Kanban. I think it's more because they found they had more choice now. Mm-hmm. So they actually got to design their own Kanban board. So they set up their columns, they set up their work and process limits. They started scratching their heads about, okay, so we've got this definition of done from Scrum. How do we spread it across those columns on the board now? Oh, okay. And then they end up with a super simple board and they say, wow, now we can actually see where everything's at. And it was that visibility and then working together on what's the best way to keep all their work visible was really what made the difference for them. And so now anytime work is jammed up, they swarm on it, knock it out and keep things moving. And so they have picked up tremendously in their productivity.
So when we talk about things like highly productive teams, how would you define what a highly functional team is?
So a highly functional team for me is a team that can collaborate consistently toward a common goal. So with that means they have good communications with the business, usually through some sort of product manager or product owner, on a very regular basis. They understand each other's strengths and deficits, because not everybody can know every part of the code base. Not everybody can have every skill. They're not pluggable components. You know, so
people are not fungible.
Yes, exactly. And with that, they also have an agile mindset. So they're constantly thinking about how are we doing each day? How are we doing each cycle, whether they're doing sprints or Kanban or whatever. And so they have this constant, not only not let me just focus on my work, but how is my team doing? So they have that team mindset and they're willing to adjust and maybe take on somebody else's work that might be a higher priority if that person's out sick or, you know, the death in the family. So it's that team that's together focusing on some common goals together. That's a high performing.
That makes sense. Mark, you are currently collaborating with Johanna on a book.
I am indeed. We just did an early release in early April. Mm-hmm. So the first four chapters are out now. Depending on when this podcast gets sent out, there might be two more chapters out there. So we're trying to release chapters now every 2 to 3 weeks. and should be done by the end of summer.
So out there means where would people go to track that down and help invest in this process, so to speak?
Yes. So they can go to leanpub.com and look for either myself, Mark Kilby, K-I-L-B-Y, or they can look for Johanna Rothman. They find either one of us. They probably find the book title nearby. Also, Johanna has it on her site. I have it on my website as well. And this book is really looking at the combined expertise of Johanna and I, what we've seen as successful. We all know the horror stories, so we didn't publish a lot of those. We know those. But what we've looked at is, you know, what is some practical advice, not the hand waving, but what are some actual principles and practices that people can take now, whether they're an existing Agile team that might be going distributed either by choice or not by choice,
right,
or existing distributed team that is struggling and wondering, can Agile help us, is another option as part of that. So we try to address those and also try to look at the team perspective, the coach perspective, and the management perspective. How do we make this work together?
Well, we've unfortunately left a number of things on the table today, and that suggests to me that at some point I'd love to come back and have a discussion about pair and mob programming and how that actually could work in distributed. I think I'd love to have a discussion about Shuhari with you and product owners and product managers, all of those things. But, you know, today I think we're nearing the end. If you woke up tomorrow morning and somebody, you know, handed you a magic wand and a cup of iced coffee or a hot cup of coffee or a cup of tea, depending on what works for you to get you up in the morning. None of that Mountain Dew stuff, though. Yeah, I'm just not going to let you do that.
Thank you.
What two things would you wish you could enhance that would enhance the value of distributed teams?
So two things came to mind for me as you were asking that. One, just a willingness to experiment.
Mm.
Don't stay stuck where you are. And that's for co-located teams as much as distributed teams. But
sure,
distributed teams definitely need to get that experimental mindset. What's something we can try? And how are we going to measure the results? What's our goal that we're trying to adjust for? So getting that experimental mindset, that's something I work with on all my clients.
How do you do that? I mean, and I know I'm pulling a string that we could probably do some other point, but how do you unlock that excitement to be able and think about experimentation?
Small steps.
We're back to that.
Yeah. So for example, I've gone into some clients and find that the people between teams don't talk very often.
Right.
So you might introduce something like Lean Coffee, which is a very flexible format, very open format for people just to ask questions and answer each other's questions. And so I've done that many times where I've gone into the client and just had some lunchtime. Well, lunchtime, depending on where the time zone is, that is. But some times where different people across the organization could get together and say, you can ask anything. It might be about another team's work. It could be about what you did on vacation. It could be literally about anything. And you get to build some bonds across the organization that way. And they start thinking about, oh, that's interesting that we now can have some open conversations and start exploring ideas. Mm-hmm. Once you do that, you can then start kicking off some slightly larger experiments. And so one that you and I talked about earlier that we built up to was something called Innovation Day. So as we had set a few experiments before that about how do we start experimenting with different things, we looked at, okay, how can we let everyone in our organization experiment? So this is similar to the idea of a hackathon where you might let different groups kind of experiment with things for 2 or 3 days once a quarter. At Sonatype, we do it once every 2 weeks.
Wow.
We actually let the development staff and our senior VP of product work this out with the other executives and said, you know, we need to let the teams loose to innovate. We're at that point now. They're ready. They've been doing Agile for a couple of years now. They're ready. We got to let them loose. And so with that, our teams have done all kinds of things. They've started some things that were probably obvious, like book clubs and just kind of exploring new ideas together. Some were exploring new frameworks they wanted to start coding in that they would never otherwise have a chance to do it. Some had bugs way down in the backlog that were just driving them nuts. And they said, okay, I just want to fix this. And get, great, do it. But some of them said, hey, you know what? I really would like for our tools to support the R language. Cool. So let's get a few people together. So over a course of about, I think, 4 of those improvement days, we built up a basic capability. It got to the point where they could finish it in one sprint. And so they pulled it into their team's backlog after talking to the product owner and said, hey, let's just finish this up and put it out there. And so they did.
Wow. Wow.
So that's the kind of thing that you can achieve if you can trust your teams and let them innovate.
Interesting. So that's one. Before, what was number two?
So number two, I used to say the one thing that I miss that I don't have on my distributed teams is not happy hours, although I miss those sometimes, but it's not whiteboard so much. With the whiteboard, you have flexibility. Anybody can go up to it. Anybody can draw. Anybody can erase. But the thing we have in the distributed environment is we can kind of go beyond what we have in the physical. So what I really want is silly putty. That's what I want. I want something where anybody on the team can manipulate whatever the idea is. So it's not just a whiteboard, but it's really how do I squish this? How do I slap it against something and pull an image of something and stretch that image and think about different ways and different ideas? So I'm changing my answer to I want a virtual whiteboard to I want virtual silly putty for my distributed team.
Well, that is something to shoot for because I think we can get the whiteboards. It's silly putty. That's interesting. So something to chew for. Mark, this has been absolutely fantastic. By the way, what is the name of the book that you're writing with Johanna so that people can go out and find it?
So the book is From Chaos to Successful Distributed Agile Team.
Super.
So you see that out there. You can also see it on my website, markkilby.com, or you'll see me tweet about it at mkilby, or you'll see me on LinkedIn share some notes from it.
Absolutely super. And we'll have all that contact information in the show notes. Mark, at this point, as you know, I open up the platform for you to promote anything that you like. So the platform is yours.
Well, so you've already given me the lead in for the book, so no need to talk about that anymore. But I would say if you have individuals that are, you know, curious about how they can make the distributed teams better, there's many, many groups out there online that you can interact with, have discussions. Some of them are software teams. Some of them are not software teams that are doing some very innovative things online. Mm-hmm. So if you go to my website and you'll see some links that will talk about what are some of those online groups. One of my favorite is Virtual Team Talk. So that's a group that I participate in often, and we'll do some internal experiments and internal and sometimes external conferences about what are some of the things that we are doing online with our teams and organizations.
Absolutely fantastic. Mark Kilby, thank you for participating on the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thank you, Tom.
In Reread Saturday News, we are in week 2 of our reread of The Checklist Manifesto by Atul Gawande. By the way, buy the book, read along. Chapter 1 builds the case that the world we live in and the work that we do is very complex. Complexity creates the possibility for errors. Checklists are a tool to help avoid errors in complicated and complex environments. In the Software Process and Measurement Cast, number 507, we will feature our essay, Exploring Consensus Decision-Making. One of the primary decision-making techniques used in teams is consensus decision-making. The power of consensus decision-making is that it yields decisions that are outputs of a process in which the team or group finds a solution that everyone can either actively support or live with. The process of getting to a decision or solution that the whole team can at least live with will make sure that everyone on the team has a seat at the table and that the team builds both majority and minority views into the deliberation process. Sounds simple? We will also have columns from Susan Parente, I Am Not a Scrum Demedalist, and Jeremy Berrio, QA Corner. If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, are we there yet?